March 1st, right here in your ear, and it's time for Freedom Frenzy. The month of February is behind us, and now we can look toward the middle of March. And I recall the quote from William Shakespeare's play, Beware the Ides of March. They're in front of us, and, you know, we might get knifed figuratively or literally by the time the middle of the month comes by. And I say that kind of tongue-in-cheek because I guess if you're like me, you pay attention to what's going on with the price of gold and silver.
And
this morning, gold hit a new two-month high of about $14.25 an ounce. And that's only $9.10 off of the all-time high that she banged up against back in December of last year. Silver, though, good golly molly, silver has hit a 31-year high this morning, and that being $34.55 an ounce. And you know, dear, over the month of February, the shortest month of the year, silver prices actually climbed 16%, putting a big smile on those with enough foresight to have gotten themselves some and stuck it away to weather the ravages of the decline of the fiat money. And that's really what we're talking about here. The gold and silver are really not going up in value. It's the paper money that's declining in relationship to gold and silver. That's what's really going on. And the relationship of all the other stuff that you might need and want, like food, for instance, their prices are really not changing either. But their relationship to the fiat money is certainly becoming a wide chasm, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we can expect that to continue, actually. And you know, when we do the hit and run news segment today, I've got an excerpt out of the latest e-blast from the National Inflation Association.
Yeah.
And I'm going to bring it out today because it certainly underscores what I've been saying for quite some time. And it's neat to find out that somebody with that kind of a forum can put that information out there and corroborate what I've long held as instrumental views insofar as what's going on. And I'm just hoping that more and more people are starting to pay attention, because now even the folks, and we'll get to this, and I almost hate to say this, the people at National Inflation Association are also saying America is looking at a long, hot summer themselves. So, What have you got for us today, dear?
Well, I don't know, just my usual smart aleck commentary and feisty personality, which is going to take me a little while to start percolating here, but I have no doubt that in the hands of my wonderful co-host, I'll be percolating momentarily.
You got a wonderful co-host? Where'd you put him?
My friend Troy Newman, who's the president of Operation Rescue, is coming into town today, and we'll be having a press conference tomorrow at the Capitol. Texas gives over $5 million a year to Planned Parenthood. This is crazy. And he's got some whistleblowing to do on the prenatal murder industry in Texas, and is calling for the complete defunding of Planned Parenthood, in addition to some other things. So that's kind of fun. I spent a little bit of time on the phone with my conference call with other pro-life leaders and people working here in Texas. Today, we are going to have Preston Fleming as our guest, and I'm sure that you already, said that. I'm very excited, Jerry. I haven't read his books, but I've read the Reader's Digest version of the books, and I'm going to have to go get some of these, and especially have my boys read them. This is going to be a fascinating interview, so I'm excited about today's show. Y'all are definitely going to want to stay tuned. We're going to go out to a break. When we come back, Hit and Run News. Stay with us.
Don't answer it.
If fear strikes your heart when the phone rings, knowing it may be another bill collector, it's time for you to call Zero Debt in 90 Days. 800-477-9256. Settlements, bankruptcy, and attorneys are not the answer and may end up costing you up to 10 times more than necessary. Listen, if you're already in debt, does it make sense to get buried in another payment plan? Zero Debt in 90 Days gets you out of debt in 90 days guaranteed without a payment plan and without attorneys or going to court. Get the fastest relief from debt on the planet when you call 800-477-9256. If you have debt with the IRS, credit cards, student loans, or a foreclosure, we can help at Zero Debt in 90 Days, and we are the only organization to provide written guarantees on the results. Go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Or call now for free information. 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Incorporated's patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, visit www.lasermedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasermedinc.com.
Call now, 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528.
Warning for all Gulf Coast disaster survivors. Be aware that dangerous gases are in the air you breathe. Benzene, hydrogen sulfide, methylene chloride, and Corexit 9500. Keep your body clean with micro plant powder. For all Gulf Coast residents and all who want to be healthy, hempusa.org brings you a new formulation of micro plant powder with lactobacillus acidophilus, rebuilding your immune system while detoxing the rest of your body, pulling out positive toxins, heavy metals, viruses, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Microplant powder will help eliminate these dangerous chemicals from the body used in the Gulf cleanup. At hempusa.org, we want you to try our number one selling detox product, Microplant powder. Call and order at 1-908-691-2608. 1-908-691-2608. Or visit us at hempusa.org today.
And we are back. And I want to kick off today's Hit and Run News with that little excerpted piece out of that e-blast last night from NIA. And I could read you the whole thing, but we really don't have time for it. But I think when you get just what I pulled out, and it's basically three paragraphs. So I'll launch into it, and you kind of tell me what you think later on in the program if we have time. Luckily for the United States, because of the dollar's status as the world's reserve currency, the U.S. has been able to export its food inflation to the rest of the world. America's food inflation crisis is so far manifesting itself in Arab nations. It started out early last month with citizens in Algeria marching to the capital, chanting, "Bring us sugar." It then spread to riots in Tunisia, which saw 14 civilian deaths when protesters clashed with police there. Afterwards came the Egyptian Revolution, which saw 365 civilian deaths and thousands more injured, leading up to the resignation of the Egyptian president, Hosni Mubarak, on February 11th. In recent days, the civil revolt has now reached Libya, the third largest oil producer in Africa and holder of Africa's largest oil reserves. Although the United States is largely self-sufficient when it comes to the production of food, oil is a very important commodity used in agriculture production, and the United States needs to import most of its oil. With oil prices soaring through the roof, Arab nations are getting their revenge on the United States for the food inflation they are suffering from. Oil is the second largest expense that affects retail prices of food in our supermarkets after the cost of agricultural commodities. The reason a 50% increase or more in nearly all agricultural commodities hasn't caused food prices in the United States supermarkets to rise by 50% or more in recent months is because Americans have been blessed with cheap oil. The surging price of oil means that America's food inflation crisis is now imminent. All American citizens need to be ready for nationwide civil unrest, rioting, looting, and protesting later this year, even worse than that which is occurring in Arab nations. The Arab world will survive this crisis because they have oil reserves that they can export to Asian countries when the United States can no longer afford to import their oil. However, America's survival is dependent on the world's confidence in a piece of paper that has no intrinsic value and is steadily being debased as fast as human possible. It's going to be a long, hot summer, folks, and it's just around the corner. You need to start asking yourself, are you ready to deal with it? Are you? Are you?
I think long, hot summer spells out squash is going to grow very well this summer, so you better get some in the ground.
I don't know. It might be a new dish on America's tables called duck and cover.
You know, somebody was asking me the other day, I think I talked about this, what we were doing for emergency food storage, and because it's very difficult to get organic, you know, emergency food reserves. I guess the Latter-day Saints Church, it would be the purest form of their emergency food. But I have to say, Jerry, we only eat slow food. So if everything went down, we would still eat pretty well for a while. I'd be wishing for some chickens so we'd have a steady supply of eggs. But other than that, I think we'd do all right. So those of you who don't know about this book, I would highly recommend going out and getting a copy of Nourishing Traditions and all the different things you can do with storage-type foods, you know, even sprouting beans and seeds and nuts, wheat, you know, getting your wheat in big buckets. You know, you've really got to stock up and prepare, because when the unrest hits, it's going to hit hard. And nobody's going to really know for how long. So that would be my little recommendation. All right. Well, I've got an interesting and shocking story here, Jerry. I know you're going to be shocked. New Internationalist magazine recently released its top 10 worst corporate lobbyists, basically a hall of shame. And who do you think ranked way up there?
Corporate lobbyists? Are we talking about individuals or companies that spend money?
Companies. Oh,
it's got to be your buds at Monsanto.
That's right. The report explains that the Obama administration is littered with ex-Monsanto executives, as is, well, the Supreme Court. Clarence Thomas is a former Monsanto attorney here in Georgia. The Gary Black is a former lobbyist for Monsanto and biotechnology. At least three former Monsanto execs hold high positions of power in the Obama administration. Michael Taylor, senior advisor to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, used to be vice president of Monsanto. Islam Siddiqui, former vice president of the Monsanto-funded lobbying group CropLife, is now a negotiator for the U.S. Trade Representative on agriculture. And Roger Beachy, the director of the National Institute of Food and Agriculture, is former director of plant science, of a plant science center funded by Monsanto. Obama's nomination of Elena Kagan to the U.S. Supreme Court was also another victory for Monsanto, as Kagan defended Monsanto's right to contaminate the environment with GM alfalfa in the case of Monsanto versus Gerson seed. Perhaps Kagan's nomination was greased with a little bit of Monsanto lobbying funds, which in 2010 alone topped $8 million. All around the world, Monsanto spends big bucks promoting itself as a savior of the planet, lying to governments and the public about the supposed benefits of GM crops and their extreme chemical dependency. Comprehensive evidence has shown that despite all the lofty claims, GMOs have not improved yields. They certainly are not better for the environment, and they have never been proven safe for consumption.
Well, I've got a piece, dear, that I believe belongs in the category of why are we paying for this nonsense?
That's a big category, Jerry.
Yeah, it is. And this article actually appeared in LifeScience.com, and the title of the article there was A Small Nuclear War Would Stall Global Warming. Got that? NASA computer models reveal what a small regional nuclear war in one part of the world would do to the global climate and environment. The results are grim. You think? If 100 Hiroshima-sized bombs, each as powerful as 15,000 tons of TNT, were exchanged in a war, say, between two developing world nuclear powers like India and Pakistan, for instance, models show that the resulting fires would send 5 million metric tons of black carbon into the upper atmosphere, the lowest altitude layer of the atmosphere. There, the soot would absorb solar heat and rise like a hot air balloon, reaching heights from which it would not easily settle back to the ground. In the shade of this carbon shield, Earth would cool. The effects would lead up to unprecedented climate change, said NASA physical scientist Luke Oman at a meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science last week. Now, you know, American taxpayers undoubtedly picked up the tab for this science. They probably picked up the tab for Lou to go to this meeting. And they probably picked up the tab for portions of the meeting itself, I would suspect. Now, I'm hard-pressed to understand the rationale behind this kind of garbage. But is this what we've arrived at? Are we hypothetically forecasting nuclear war in a limited fashion so as to maybe offer it as a tacit solution to a false problem called global warming?
Yeah.
Well, they did go on to say that the reversal of this global warming trend through this device wouldn't be a good thing. And I quote, "Our results suggest that agriculture would be severely impacted, especially in areas that are susceptible to late spring or early fall frosts. And additionally, the model showed global precipitation would reduce by 10% globally for 1 to 4 years, and the ozone layer would thin, resulting in an influx of dangerous ultraviolet radiation. These results confirm predictions made previously by researchers at the University of Colorado at Boulder." You know, 100 Hiroshima-sized bombs make up a mere 0.03% of the worldwide nuclear weapons arsenal. We could do oh so much better, couldn't we?
Wow.
This is insane. And we're paying for this, folks.
Yeah. All right. Well, Jerry, once again, I have proof that legislators have no idea they are entities under authority, that they truly receive double lobotomies upon being sworn into office, and that they really need to be put on trial as perjurers to their oath of office and the crimes against humanity that they are aggressively advancing. This is insane. Recently, there have been tons of stories coming out about how toxic and dangerous fluoride is to humans. It's bad for your teeth. It's bad for your health. It's bad for IQs of children and cognitive abilities of all humans. Even the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services is beginning to recognize, well, we might have to do something about the fluoridation of water.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Estrogen dominance, a brand new 20th century disease, a phrase coined by Dr. John R. Lee 35 years ago. Dr. Lee proved that all the estrogen that is coming from food and water is having a devastating effect on our health. The rapid rise in breast cancer, uterine cancer, prostate cancer, weight gain, osteoporosis, feminizing of our boys and early puberty of our girls, and also the destruction of natural killer cell function. Natural killer cells are our only protection from cancer and viral infection. Dr. Lee found that using natural progesterone, about 20 milligrams per day, would not only reverse osteoporosis, but would greatly reduce the cancer issues, as well as dozens of other health challenges we face today. Visit our website, healthlinkamerica.com, to order the DVD on hormone imbalance. Learn how hormone imbalance destroys the immune system and get started on natural progesterone and Cyto-S. It will not only change your life, it may in fact save your life. Once again, that website is healthlinkamerica.com.
In times like these, you can't depend on the government to keep you warm and fed, but you can depend on the Vermont Bun Baker to do just that. With the Vermont Bun Baker, you'll never be in a situation where you can't cook, bake, fry, boil water, or heat your home all at the same time. One of the most revolutionary cook stoves, wood stoves ever, the Vermont Bun Baker is available with or without soapstone veneer, a natural stone that retains heat and radiates it back into the room once the fire is out. A beautiful addition to your home, the Vermont Bun Baker has an efficiency rating well above 75% and qualifies for the wood stove tax credit. For more information, watch the Vermont Bun Baker on YouTube and live stream or visit us at www.vermontwoodstove.com. You can also reach us by calling 1-866-SOAPSTONE. Don't ever be hungry or cold because the power's gone out. With a Vermont Bun Baker, all you have to worry about is what's for dinner.
Welcome back to Freedom Frenzy. Well, I nonchalantly sauntered over the cliff, so now that we're back to I'll quickly wrap up this story. The Arkansas State Senate quietly passed Senate Bill 359 in a 25-7 vote. And this bill, authored by lawyer and senator, by a lawyer and senator David Johnson, if the bill is upheld, it will have the greatest effect on Fort Smith, Arkansas, which happens to be the largest non-fluoridated city in Arkansas. So basically what this bill does is fluoridates the water of the entire state. On numerous occasions, Fort Smith residents particularly have overwhelmingly voted against water fluoridation. So these guys slipped this legislation through. The people absolutely do not want their water fluoridated. Plus, all the evidence that has come out demonstrating how dangerous fluoride is, especially to children. And in the face of all this, this legislator sneaks this legislation through, and 25 of his cohorts in crime were complicit in it. It's really, really disgusting. Legislators cavalierly order fluoride into the bodies of American children without considering their individual total fluoride intake, clearly causing potential harm, said Attorney Paul Bieber, president of the New York State Coalition opposed to fluoridation. Legislators who vote for fluoridation often base their decision on hearsay and fail to look at the science behind fluoridation. And quite frankly, until we get more serious and start charging these legislators with crimes against humanity, you know, they need to be scared to do this sort of thing. They need, I loved that one restaurant we talked about, Jerry, where the restaurant refuses to serve TSA agents. Mm-hmm. This is the sort of thing times 10 we need to be doing. There are at least 24 studies that have found an association between lowered IQ and levels of fluoride in water as low as 1.9 parts per million, said Paul Connett, PhD, director of the Fluoride Action Network, a nonprofit advocacy group devoted to exposing the truth about the dangers of fluoride. So if this Senate bill is allowed to progress, Arkansas will now have fluoridated water statewide.
Bless their hearts.
It's disgusting, Jerry, how legislators, they have such a God complex.
Let's talk about some federal legislators that have that complex, dear. Republicans controlling the House of Representatives are moving quickly to pass a stopgap legislation measure to avoid a partial shutdown of the government when temporary funding runs out this coming Friday. This measure that they're working on today would keep the government running for two whole weeks to buy time for the Republicans in the House, the Democrats in the Senate, and the Obama administration to come to some sort of agreement on a longer-term measure to fund the government through the end of the budget year in October. It's a relatively mild volley in a party-defining spending battle that promises to go on for months and probably more likely years. Republicans want to slash what in reality amounts to a piddling $60 billion from agency budgets over the coming months as a down payment on larger cuts later in the year, but are settling for what amounts to symbolic and especially easy cuts of $4 billion as the price for this two-week stopgap bill. The $60 billion being cut, or at least being looked to be cut, is less than the budget of the Department of Education alone. This should actually put the entire country on notice as to the true zeal of the new Congress to put America on sound financial footing. Another choice of a choice piece of ready reduction, would be the Department of Housing and Urban Development. Like that of education, it's another constitutional boondoggle if there ever was one. Saving there would result in another $41.6 billion less spent. This is just a good start. It's reflective of the swinging of the axe with an eye to upholding true constitutional principles and, by extension, upholding one's oath of office as well, a novel idea in the season of treachery and deceit. This measure that they're talking about today would keep federal agencies running at least at last year's spending levels through March 18th, in line with two prior spending bills passed last year under Democratic control of Congress. It also adds in $4 billion in cuts to various programs, including some that Obama had sought to terminate and others that have billions of dollars set aside for pet projects sought by lawmakers. That money's will probably not be needed since Republicans have banned earmarks for at least the next 2 years. Now, Jenny, I went to online this morning and looked at the budgets for both the Department of Education and HUD. And, you know, they've got online for you to look and Google at their requested budgets for the upcoming year.
Yeah.
And there's some buzzwords in there. It's all about recovery and investment and sustainability. And though reading the buzzwords and just glancing at the material in their forecasted budget or desired budget made me nauseous.
Oh, my goodness, Jerry. Yes. Looking at budgets in general for government entities make me nauseous, but I'm with you. It's so disgusting.
I agree.
It's taken by lethal force and basically thrown away.
Well, dear, we got to go to a break, and when we come back, we'll be bringing Preston Fleming on, so go grab something warm to drink. We'll be right back.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
The Grainmaker Grain Mill. Handmade goodness since 1999. Handcrafted stainless steel and high-quality alloys. There has not been a finer grain mill made right here in the great state of Montana. Hand-operated, the grain mill does it all. Wheat, corn, peanut butter, rye, rice, coffee, beans, flaxseed, all grain types. Make your own gluten-free flour. Experience the satisfaction of providing wholesome, nutritious foods for your family without additives or preservatives. Each mill is handcrafted with manufacturer's lifetime warranty. To order your grain mill, call us at 1-800-724-2719 or go to our online store, republicbroadcasting.org. Take a look at why this grain mill will be passed down through generation.
Introducing IXL Anti-Friction Metal Conditioner. IXL works at the molecular level to reduce friction by penetrating into and bonding onto the microscopic openings of the walls of ferrous base metals. The surfaces become smoother and denser, and this reduces the heat, friction, metal expansion, and wear caused by moving metal surfaces. The benefits are reduced maintenance activities and cost, increased fuel efficiency, and prolonged equipment life. It will not clog filters, pipes, injectors, or supply lines, does not build up or accumulate upon itself as do many other additives. IXL does not contain moly, PTFE, or graphites. Also offers the tremendous benefits of being non-toxic. It's used for friction reducer and performance enhancer in gas or diesel engines, transmissions, automatic or standard gearboxes, turbos, electric motors, outdrives, lathe, and cutting applications. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, then to our online store, or call us at 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719.
The Berkeelite's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkeelite, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkeelite is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkeelite, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
Comrades, we're back, and before I bring on our guests today, I guess I need to give them a little bit of a preface. This is Preston Fleming's first time on Freedom Frenzy, and Mr. Fleming is a novelist and an author, and he's an author of a series of books, a trilogy, if you will. He actually calls it a trilogy, The Commas, and if I'm ruining the name there, Preston, you'll have to forgive me. The thing that caught my attention in some of the information that Preston sent us is his discussion of what's being done to Americans, those Americans that choose to expatriate, go somewhere else, and set up life anew, and what the federal government is doing to them as they exit. Now, I think that Preston will be able to give us a very unique view of that situation, because he's also a former tax attorney and a former United States consular officer. So we'll get a unique perspective of that issue, I think. And then, as Jenny indicated earlier in the program, the books that she's sort of gotten a Reader's Digest taste of, if you will, has spurred her to think that she needs to go out there and get those books, particularly for her children. And we'll hopefully explore that as well. So without any further ado, let's bring Preston on. Good afternoon, Preston.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on the show, Jerry.
How are you today, sir?
I'm doing fine.
Well, where do you want to begin? I'm going to kind of steer you one direction, Preston, but I think you've got an agenda here that you want to kind of work through. Where do you want to start?
Well, first of all, how much time do we have, do you think?
We'll go as long as you want to go, up until about 1 o'clock Eastern time.
Great.
So
well,
if you run out of gas, we'll do something else. How's that?
Oh, no, I won't run out of gas. There's plenty to talk about. I wanted to make sure that I touch the high points. Basically, we can talk about the books, but I think the books are really just an entry point for the discussion of what's happening in America, and particularly this capital flight, capital controls, and the exit tax. But in addition, I've outlined 5 stages on the road to tyranny. And when I talk about tyranny and I talk about camps, these are the kind of camps that they had in the Gulag. These aren't the camps that people are speculating now at the moment about the FEMA camps. That's a pale version of what we could face if we had a totalitarian government.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's back up to the beginning. What do you see as the driving force behind what's going on in America? And I guess you're drawing from your books and using your books as a model for what you see going on in America? Is that what we're doing here?
Yes. I wrote Camus, 40 Days of Camus, back in the year 2000, before 9/11. And at that time, I was living in a place that I loved and doing work I enjoyed, but I just had a feeling that it wasn't going to last. And I had this vision of America, not the way people projected it forward, you know, with the Dow at 50,000 and with high tech here and there and everyone living great lives of leisure. I was afraid that we might revert to what I saw in the Third World when I was living overseas, working in embassies for the State Department. I was in Lebanon during the Civil War, in Saudi Arabia during the Mecca Mosque takeover, in Tunisia during the student riots at that time when they had martial law. And I'd seen other things that I was in Egypt after Sadat's assassination. So I could see, and also I did some business and traveled to Russia frequently in the early 90s after the fall of the Soviet Union. And I could see what happens when you have a society and a government that is either overpowerful or corrupt or else where there is no rule of law. And so this vision of America is portrayed in my books, where in the 2020s, we have a president for life, one of those dictators that doesn't want to leave, and we have essentially a series of gulag-style camps where people are put to forced labor for the typical reasons that that totalitarian governments do that. That's to get rid of their political opponents, to intimidate everyone else, and to use that slave labor or forced labor to cover up the failings of a socialist economy.
Well, this Kugler-like five stages, Preston, how do you see, and I hear again, I think that your book, and this is my interpretation, you're extrapolating what you're seeing could potentially happen in America. Could you flesh that out just a little bit?
Yes, I'll come at that from a couple of different angles. When I had this vision, I was trying to say, well, how would Americans relate to this? Because many of them haven't traveled to the Third World. Many of them don't have a very clear grasp of history. They may not have had a chance to take the courses in European history, and they may not be old enough to remember it. I happened to have been reading Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago, and in Volume 3, there's a story, an actual story of things that actually happened to people in 1953 in a corrective labor camp in Kazakhstan. And I took the outline of that story, transposed it to a future America, and populated it with American characters and an American setting. And that's kind of the way the inspiration for Camus started. And after that, I wrote the book Star Chamber Brotherhood, which is set in 2029 in Boston, and also the I have not quite finished with I'll Die Later, which is set in 2022, both abroad and in America, and that's about some of these expatriate Americans who are able to get out in time and try to support a nascent freedom movement in the U.S.
Since you've styled this as a trilogy, is there a common character in all three of these books?
No, each one has a main character that's different, but they all have in common some connection with the Camus camp and the revolt there in 2024.
Mm-hmm.
And so in chronology, the first one to read would be Camus, but that is the darker of the two books that's out there now, and it's a more difficult read. It's a longer book. the 40-day or Star Chamber Brotherhood is more of a traditional thriller. It's a little shorter, faster read, but it also has flashbacks to the last stages of the Camus Revolt. But in my reviews on Amazon, when readers are commenting, most of them are saying start with Camus because they see the impact of this future America more clearly in that first book.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, your projections are a good deal darker than anything that had entered into my own mind, and I'm kind of, I think that I have a relatively realistic view of where we are today in America. So the idea that you have, that you're referencing even a darker book, this is crazy. I can see how the average American would have a hard time grasping what you're talking about.
And Preston, I guess I need to tell you, just slide it in here, and this is not a snide remark, but Jenny's of the mind that when she ends up at the FEMA camp, she'll be able to organize it.
Jerry, that was not fair. No, but I think, you know, realistically, we kind of see ourselves as, a FEMA camp kind of being, I guess, how well do we grasp Guantanamo Bay? But when you're talking about having a long-term, clear dictator and these type of slave labor camps and so on and so forth, this is very difficult to grasp. How quickly do you think that's marching upon us, and what can we do to break free of that logical progression?
Well, you've really hit on the crux of it, Jenny, and that is that most people, even those like those in your audience who are familiar with some of these issues, they have a hard time imagining how the progression would work from today's society, which is somewhat becoming polarized, to the point where we have a crisis, and then the resolution of the crisis is a totalitarian government. And so I'll go into the five stages in a moment. But remember, the role of fiction oftentimes has been to introduce these ideas to the public in an emotional way through characters and through an imaginary setting, the way that Uncle Tom's Cabin did for slavery.
Right.
In the 1850s, most people, you know, were living their own lives. They weren't paying much attention. If they weren't living in a slave state, it was pretty remote for them. Once they read Uncle Tom's Cabin, then they realized they couldn't just sleep at night knowing that all these people were in slavery.
Right.
And I think my books say, well, it could happen here. It's happened in many countries, and it's not just the Germans or those nasty Russians or those terrible Chinese or the Vietnamese or the Cambodians. The British actually were the ones who invented the modern-day concentration camp in the Boer War in the early 1900s. So what my books do is they say, well, if it happened, how could it happen? And then our role is, remember, we all have free will, both individually and collectively. At the individual level, if we go down this five-stage path, we get to the point where you have to decide, listen, I've got small children or I've got an ailing set of parents. I've got to get out before they shut the door. That's an individual choice we all have to face. Collectively, since we all have free will, if we put our minds to it, we can prevent these events from getting worse and worse. So what I describe in these five stages to tyranny is the infrastructure or prerequisites for once the powers or methods and techniques and tools are in place, and then you get a leadership in power that is ruthless and will stop at nothing to gain power, then you've got that lethal combination of intent and method to take this country and hijack it.
Well, I'm glad you're not leaving us out in the cold here, Preston, because some gloom and doom people are kind of like, well, this is what's going to happen, so just arm yourself with the truth and good luck to you when the crud hits the fan. But you kind of see this, I mean, what I love about you is you're very high energy. I mean, you've pretty much hit the ground running since you were 14 years old, intent on it commanding a presence in America. And I think your very strategic method of through the novels in conjunction with, hands-on methods of keeping us from going where right now on our current path we're going to end up is brilliant. I want to really thank you for putting that kind of forethought into it.
Well, thank you. I certainly hope that when your readers check out the book on our website or on Amazon, and if they like it and if they that they will write a review for it and talk to their friends, because you know, books from a conservative standpoint don't get much chance in the modern literary world. It's a very inbred society of authors, agents, and publishers. And so we have to sort of spread the word for books. And there aren't many fictional books out there currently with a conservative kind of theme, or the kind of themes that your readers are following, or your listeners are following now. So if people like it, I hope that they'll spread the word.
Okay. Could you, you know, a lot of people are brass tacks oriented, Preston. I just happen to be one of those, and so that's why I'm saying this. Could you give us a just a brief scenario stepping through this Kubler-Ross stage map that you've referred to a few times now?
Yes,
and
certainly.
How it would manifest here in the United States, in your view?
Right. The five, what I call the five stages of tyranny, are things that I've synthesized from my own experience. I tried to put together, well, how, again, how could, if it happened, how could it happen? You know, that book from Sinclair Lewis in the 1930s, It Can't Happen Here. Well, that book was famous in its day, and I hope that my books will have a similar impact. But the five stages are the concentration of power, and that we've already got that. We've got not only big government, we've got big business, we've got big academia, big banks, big media, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
Then the second stage is corruption or abuse of power. And there you have essentially abuses by these large concentrations of power in combinations where they all collude together to gain more power and to squeeze the middle.
And we're certainly there.
We're there. Now, the third stage, and I'm going to go into this in more detail, but I'm going to first summarize the remaining stages. Third stage is polarization. Fourth is crisis. And that involves oftentimes some hardship where these stages sort of go gradually until there's some breaking point. And it could be a natural disaster. It could be a, you know, volcanoes going off, or a tsunami, or an electromagnetic pulse strike, or a terrorist act, or a pandemic. Something that essentially breaks the camel's back, where we have a true crisis. Now, at that point, the crisis will evolve, and there'll be a conflict. A conflict between those polarized forces in different parts of society. And what happens there is unpredictable. Remember, in the Russian Revolution, you had not only the Bolsheviks, but you had the Mensheviks and the social revolutionaries, the socialists and the monarchists and many others who were against the status quo and wanted change. But who won? No one knew in advance that it would be the Bolsheviks, but they happened to be the most ruthless, the most mm-hmm. organized, and the most determined adversary, and they won. Similarly, in the streets of Weimar Germany in the 20s and 30s, there were the socialists, the communists, and others who were vying for power. The Nazis won because they were the most ruthless and determined, and they controlled the streets. When, if and when we reach a crisis in America, and we will have gone through all those other stages to get there, if the bad guys win, then what they do is predictable. That is, they get rid of their political opponents, anybody who has expressed an opinion opposing them or lives a lifestyle that they don't like, and those people will be going to the camps. And the reasons they'll be going there will be laws that are already on the books, laws that were probably already violating, because no one can keep track of the shelves of regulations and federal laws already there that we're probably already stepping on without knowing it. And then the people who are left will be intimidated, and the folks that are there will be working for the government, of course, for free. And there's actually another dimension to this. Let's say the incentives or the economics of prisons. Most people don't realize that virtually all the railroads in the Soviet Union, from its inception until at least the 1950s or 60s, all of them were built with prison slave labor. All of them were built by Gulag prisoners with engineers from the Gulag administration. Mm-hmm. That's the scale of the work being done. And it's a bit ironic, but in Camus, what do you suppose the prisoners are doing with their labor?
Well, I would say probably a bunch of different things, but it's all state beneficial. That's the orientation.
Well, it's the recycling. After this crisis, which isn't identified in the book, or a series of crises, there's a heck of a lot of abandoned housing, and there are machines that are not working, factories and so on. And so these prisoners are in there recycling military equipment, civilian equipment, industrial equipment,
mm-hmm.
And that means that our economy, you know, is not working. It's, instead, it's being scavenged. So that's the kind of image that I have in this future America if we aren't careful and don't avoid these kinds of crises.
Indeed. Is part of your coverage of the polarization aspect, does that, do you demonstrate any parallels between the Bolsheviks and the Nazis that you've mentioned, and any political force here in America that we need to be mindful of?
Well, you know, Jerry, I don't know what goes on in people's minds. I'm not a mind reader or a prophet, so I try not to ascribe motives to any living people. But there are confluences of interest, and people acting in parallel because they all have the same incentives.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're seeing some of that going on today.
Preston, we're going to have to cut away to a break. We'll pick you back up on the other side. This is Freedom Frenzy. We'll be right back.
Have you heard? Proactiv is new and better than ever. Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway, and you'll also receive free shipping. Do you have troubled skin, acne? Well, we have great news. With new Proactiv, your acne can heal and you can prevent new breakouts from happening. Be one of the first to try it by giving us a call at 1-800-635-1053. Because we're going to let a million people try new Proactiv risk-free. Get two free gifts and also receive free shipping when you call right now. You heard it. Be one of the first to try new and better than ever Proactiv, and you'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial of the new Proactiv, two free extras, and free shipping when you call 1-800-635-1053. This is our best radio offer ever. Get your risk-free 60-day trial of new Proactiv plus free shipping. That's right, free shipping. This offer won't last long. Call 1-800-635-1053. That's 1-800-635-1053.
Are skyrocketing prescription costs draining your budget? If you don't have insurance or are taking medication not covered by insurance, the Powerhouse Savings Card can lower your prescription costs by up to 50%. Now you and your family can save 20 to 50% on all prescriptions. It's accepted by most pharmacies and mail-order pharmacies nationwide. No prescription card is easier to use. Just show your card and save 20 to 50% right on the spot. There are no monthly fees, just a one-time processing fee of only $4.95 for you and your immediate family. Stop paying full price for prescriptions. Stop going without the medication you need because it costs too much. Now your family can get the prescriptions they need at a cost you can afford. Call 1-800-963-0232 now and start saving money with the Powerhouse Savings Card. Call 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
When I had a heart attack at 42, I was not sure what the future held. But a year later, the doctors could find nothing wrong with me and took me off all my medications. What did I do? I took a herbal mixture of garlic, cayenne, and a few other herbs mixed in liquid form. I now call this Extendovite. I would have never believed that a few simple herbs could actually change my life like they did. Now it's your turn to see what the powers of garlic and cayenne can do for you. For only $69.95 plus shipping and handling for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid, you too can begin on your path to better health. For more information, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hey, welcome back to Freedom Frenzy. Preston, I'm curious to know, I want to talk about this mass exodus from America by wealthy Americans, because I really wasn't aware of this at all. And I'd like you to address the exit tax. And in the wrap-up, I definitely am curious to know where you would be exiting if you joined the ranks of wealthy Americans and went to another country, because certainly if you're thinking to leave America long-term, you don't want to jump out of the skillet into the fire. So go ahead and tell us about this.
Okay, well, most people aren't aware of this, and I wasn't really focused much on it. I'd read a few articles over the years. But when I started looking into this, I found that, first of all, there's a great deal of capital flight already going on, a great deal of people leaving the country for a variety of reasons. Not all of them are taxed. But what the government's done is to see the fact that over the whole 20th century, America has been a kind of place where people want to come to. They don't want to leave. And but recently, because of a number of trends, including not just taxation but regulation, tort abuses, and lifestyle preferences, many people just have chosen to retire abroad. Some people choose to move their businesses abroad, and many people, especially if they're in the money management business, have moved abroad because that's where the money's being managed today, not just in New York anymore. But what the government started in 1996 was the beginnings of an exit tax. What they did in the HIPAA Act, which is called the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, was they taxed anyone who renounces their citizenship for 10 years after they renounce it, which essentially amounts to taxing foreigners, but that didn't stop the government anyway. And it also required the names of those who expatriated, meaning renouncing their citizenship, during the previous quarter to be published in the Federal Register. And they had a presumption that if you left the country and you renounced citizenship and you had a net worth of $500,000 or a taxable income of $100,000, you were presumed to be leaving for tax avoidance reasons, but you could rebut that assumption. Now, in 1996, they also passed an act under the Illegal Immigration Reform and Responsibility Act that allowed the United States to permanently deny people entry in the U.S. if they were deemed to have expatriated for tax avoidance reasons. So again, if you leave, you're taxed even after you renounce citizenship, and you can't come back. Now, in 2000,
Preston, where in the code is the empowerment for these actions?
Well, Illegal Immigration Reform and Immigration Responsibility Act is at 8 U.S.C. 1181 A10 capital E, and the HIPAA Health Insurance Portability Act, that was the 10-year taxation is 26 U.S. Code 877 small A1, and the names being published is in 26 U.S. Code 6039 capital G small E3. So these are all there. I mean, one could look them up. They've been there in the books for a long time. But mm-hmm. Let's get a little ahead in our progression here. In 2001, we had the Patriot Act, which is largely financial, has provisions about capital controls, and we'll come back to that in a minute. The American Jobs Creation Act in 2004 raised the levels of net worth required for this tax avoidance presumption to $2 million of net worth and $124,000 indexed for inflation for the annual taxable income. But it essentially strengthened the presumption of tax avoidance. And then in 2008, in 6 days, this law was passed, the HEARA. I'll come back to that. This is where we have the real exit tax.
Mm-hmm.
I see a break coming on.
Yes, you're very, very observant. Well, we are going to cut away to a break, y'all, and when we come back, there'll be more of this conversation about expatriation and the costs that you'll incur to do so. We'll be right back.